Now, this set of tools here on tolerance analysis and worst case analysis, as being one example of a tolerance setting, is a tool mostly enjoyed and practiced by mechanical and electrical engineers and other design related engineers. But it's one that we need to get involved with as reliability engineers and to some extent quality folks too. The idea of tolerance analysis is it's the basic acknowledgement that the individual components and parts are going to vary, and no two individual flanges or capacitors will be exactly the same. But the design team still needs to create a product that will work with some amount of variation in the given parts and bits and pieces of a product. The idea is that the design team then analyzes the alignment, say, or the functionality of a part of a system, given the various ranges that are possible coming into the parts. Now, it's individual parts may all be still in specification in some range of values that they've been assigned, but then the overall system may not work. And so that's where reliability comes in, or to some extent quality, is that if you don't get the analysis of the variability correct, we end up with failures or parts that don't, or systems that don't function as we would expect. Now, as you can imagine, there's a number of different methods for determining the tolerance, and some of which rely on statistics, and it's another way we can get involved with the process. But understanding the various methods and the kinds of data that goes into it, plus how it impacts and communicates back and forth with the supply team and with the manufacturing teams, allows us to identify areas that may have a higher risk of failure than other areas. So once again, it's a connection to the reliability work, even though it's a tool that we don't usually employ directly, but we may be involved with it to some extent. Now, one of the methods, and probably the most common method, is the worst case tolerance analysis. So basically, I'm going to take the ranges of variability that we expect, the plus and minus range of some dimension, for example, on, say, a plate thickness, and we're just going to add them up. We'll add all of the minimums and add all of the maximums, and all we need is the range of the variation. And we say, well, how large could it be? How small could it be? And if that still works, and then we're good. If the alignment still occurs, or if it still fits, or if it still functions, it's a pretty conservative method. It's not the worst or the most conservative. But in some cases, if this method works, it's quick, it's simple, and if we can get a design that works with this approach, we're in probably pretty good shape. But the amount of variability may go beyond our range that we assume is the worst case methods. And so that's one of the risks. And there's a balance. If you make it too open, the product probably won't work. The alignment won't occur, or it won't fit. It'd be too loose or too sloppy, or some other aspect will be compromised. So when it works, it's great. When it doesn't work, well, there's other methods. The root sum squared method is using standard deviations. And so if I'm making an alignment between a variety of different parts, and I look at the variability of each of those parts described as a standard deviation, I can do a root sum squared method in order to see what's the most likely stack up that we're going to get. And so we're using basically a random sample or a designation of the amount of variability we would expect to see, and then determining whether we can still get the product to work. The idea is that it's unlikely that you'll pick parts that are at the extremes of their distribution. So like the worst case method, if we pick parts that are always the maximum thickness, then the total thickness is going to be fairly rare that it actually occurs. And so we're going to take that concept into play here and say, well, what's the most expected value? and assuming that we get one or two pieces that are closer to the extremes, but overall, in general, we're going to get parts that are going to be closer to the middle of their variability than other ones. And keep in mind, this is another one of those that we do not work with standard deviations directly. And the root sum squared is kind of a clue to that, is we take those standard deviation values, square them, add them up, and then take the square root in order to get the systems or the stack-ups variability that we would expect. Now, we can add variances, but we cannot add standard deviations. And so it's a pretty straightforward method. Now, each of these methods, I'll try to prepare an example and add it into the lesson. The extreme value method is the most conservative, but it's taking some of the aspects of the distributions we're dealing with, but then we deliberately pick extremely rare events. So instead of just a plus minus of the range of what we would expect, a simple, straightforward set of measurements or looking at a range of values, here we're going to pick things that are maybe 4 or 5 standard deviations away from the mean. Exceedingly rare events. And so there are distributions called extreme value distributions, and you could employ that. This one's not as common because it's so conservative. It's difficult to get a set of tolerances for a part and still have a functional unit. And so it is used on occasion, and when it works, it works fairly well in making a very robust product to all of the variability that may occur, but it's very difficult to get it designed that will actually work. Now, Monte Carlo method probably takes the most amount of information and some statistical data, but it also provides a more realistic and minimizes the number of assumptions that we need to make in order to use the worst case or extreme value or even root mean squared. So in this case, we need the distributions for the different variabilities. So if it's thickness or hole alignment or cutting diameter or capacitor values, resistor values, or whatever, is that we then take sufficient measurements or use standard data or historical data to say, well, what's the histogram or the probability density function for each of those different dimensions or measurements or parts of the system that we're interested in? And some may be normal, some may be log normal, some may be Weibull, some may be exponential, some may be square or triangular. Whatever type of shape is appropriate to describe the data. And you could even use just the actual histogram of the measurements. If you have, say, a couple hundred measurements, that histogram is probably pretty accurate to describe the population. And the basic idea is that I take a random sample of each of the components in the tolerance stack up, and then combine them as if they were actually being put together as a part, and then check to see if we still have alignment or what's the final dimension, say, is of interest. And it allows us then to create, say, 1,000 of these virtual components or systems, I should say, and measuring the alignment, and then or thickness or whatever it is that we're trying to set tolerance for. And then we get a distribution of the final results. And we can determine, given the normal, or not normal, given the expected variability of each of the dimensions, we can find out what our system variability is. And it's relatively accurate in that regard, as long as we include all of the different sources of variability in the model. It's pretty quick, and you can use Excel and a handful of other tools to do this. The concept is pretty straightforward, and so you may hear more about that in some of the sample tests and questions. Monte Carlo is also used in a variety of other areas of analysis and so on, but it is pretty handy when setting tolerances and allows you to do plenty of what if and comparisons against what you expect or what you're measuring and what actually occurs and its impact on your system final functionality and alignment or performance. Now, the better groups that I've worked with and seen are setting tolerances on their drawings and specifications, but with full knowledge of the capability. Remember the statistical process control section? The process capability in mind. So setting wide tolerances for a given process of making a dimension or a product or a piece of material means that the more variability is allowed. And it then allows us to have fewer pieces that are scrap or fewer systems once assembled that don't work and so on. Now, it's not always possible if the alignment and the finish and the fit all have to be very precise. You may have to set fairly tight tolerances. But it's setting the tight tolerances for the areas that truly matter is the trick. You don't just uniformly set plus or minus 1% tolerances on all your dimensions, because some places that's too little, and in other places it's too much. And so setting it appropriately using one or more of these modeling tools allows you then to set tolerances that keep in mind the manufacturing potential to actually make parts and systems that meet your requirements. So in the next section, we're going to introduce a rather large set of lessons on design of experiments.